Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories. Hello, good morning, welcome. Happy New Year. It's the last time I can say that. It's already been a week, but here I am. It is Speak Up here on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, the campus community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast on the unceded ancestral territory of the Halkamilam and Squamish-speaking peoples who have been here since time immemorial, gathering to share information and stories and culture and music. And I'm very grateful to be able to be here in this place, live and work and do my own version of that, sharing stories and ideas and culture and music and other things. Hope you're doing well. Hope you've had a good start to the new year so far. This is my first show of 2026. And, well, there's a bunch of different stuff on it. Still some plates spinning, some balls up in the air, as I might have some guests, I might not. But I'm going to talk to you a little bit about my break. I'm going to talk to you about some stuff going on. There's a really cool local music festival coming up that CJSF is helping to present as a media sponsor that I would be excited about anyway, but now I have a particular reason to talk about it. And what else? Lots of stuff. So we'll get to that, but as was the tradition last year and the year before, and will continue to be the tradition here, I think, as long as I'm hosting, we're going to start with some local music. And, well, we have brand new music from the Golden Age of Wrestling, which is the alter ego of Devours. I don't want to break the kayfabe, but there's an adversarial relationship between Devours and the Golden Age of Wrestling. And, well, they announced earlier this week that the new Golden Age of Wrestling album, Sweet Chin Music, is coming out in February. And with that, we got a brand new single, which came with its own video. And we're going to hear that right now. This is by the Golden Age of Wrestling, Revenge Body, in brackets, Denton, Texas. And it's going to start right now.
Thank you.
brand new music from the golden age of wrestling, that is Revenge Body, Denton, Texas, off the upcoming record Sweet Chin Music, which is out February 12th via Surviving the Game. Ooh, that's the next track. We don't want to hear that. Not yet, anyway. That track, Revenge Body, also comes with a music video directed by Medusa Wyatt, which you can check out on YouTube. Otherwise, you can find all of the Golden Age of Wrestling's stuff on Bandcamp. Welcome back to the show. Speak Up here on CJSF 90.1 FM. I'm Jesse. And, well, I thought that because this is the first episode of 2026, that's crazy, I could both look back at last year and look forward to the year to come. But I also thought that I really wanted to highlight an interview that I did right at the end of last year, my last live episode of 2025, where I spoke with Senna Isaac, who is a student here at SFU, and had her work published in the Embark Climate Justice Journal, which was the first ever issue edition of that journal, which is a really cool initiative by Embark Sustainability Society to get the work of students here at SFU pertaining to climate justice published and out there, and a really great opportunity to have a work published and featured in a journal, but also a good way to show that there is good work being done to help address the looming, impending, ongoing climate crisis. And that's something that we spoke about, was just the importance of positive perspectives on these kinds of things, that it's very easy to get negative and to think that, oh, it's too late and there's nothing we can do. But there are ongoing projects that show that it's possible to make change and to make improvements if we try. So we're just going to drop right into that. And when we're back, we'll be back. But enjoy this conversation between the two of us. I'm Jesse, and I'm joined in studio by Senna. Hello again.
Hello, Jesse.
How are you doing today?
I am so good. Thank you so much once again having me on your radio show. This is a first. A little nervous because I've never done this before. I've never been live. I've never even been at the studio before. So this is a first. But honestly, I would say I'm more tired than nervous at this point because I've just got done with finals, and I'm still recovering from that.
Yeah, tis the season.
Yes, right? Exactly.
I think finals or not, everyone's a little frayed at this point, and just at the point where we all need a little bit of a break.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. Especially professors have to mark everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, they got to work sometimes, I guess, right? You're here today to talk about an article that you had published called Restoring Mangroves in China, A Dual Approach to Climate Mitigation and Community Empowerment. Before we jump into that, can you just give us like a light self-introduction, who you are, how you got to the point where you're writing papers about mangrove restoration in China?
For sure. Well, hello, everyone. I'm Senna. I'm a fourth-year environmental science student here at SFU Burnaby campus. I wrote this paper exactly 2 years ago, so it's been a while. It was for this Ecology for Geographers course. The professor said to write a paper on good environmental news to challenge us, because I'm sure a lot of you always hear the constant bad news about the environment, like the rise in sea level or the increase in greenhouse gases. So I thought, okay, this is a challenge. What can I research about finding this positive news story? So I was mainly interested in greenhouse gas emissions because we are way above the safe level of CO2 gas emissions in the atmosphere. Right now, I think we're at 427.4 parts per million, and the safe reference level is 350 parts 4 million, so we're way above this threshold, right? So I thought, okay, let me research what countries are doing to decrease this amount of CO2 from the atmosphere. And I chose China because they're one of the top greenhouse gas emitters, along with USA, of course, Canada because of the oil gas industry in Alberta, and of course, Saudi Arabia. So I researched into China, like what they're doing to decrease the CO2 levels. And they were focusing on mangrove restoration. And this is so impactful because we can just simply plant a lot of these mangroves, right, to sort of sequester the carbon from the atmosphere to reduce the greenhouse gas emissions. So I was like really passionate about this because this is a nature-based solution. So rather than incorporating technology, I suppose, just plant more trees.
It does seem, yeah, simple in a way, and also very common sense that, you know, the solution, a solution to climate change, to increased carbon output, is to plant more trees.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Just as a real baseline for our listeners, what is a mangrove?
Yeah, that's a great question. Even my friend was like, what the heck's a mangrove? Basically, it's just like a tree or a shrub that grows in salty water. So you can't really find them in Canada because the climate here is too cold. So they're mainly found in coastal regions like Malaysia. Indonesia has the most mangroves population globally. And of course, the coastal regions in China, which I focused on.
Right. People might also know, like, Florida has mangroves, right? As sort of maybe the closest, although I don't know how that geography works across the Pacific versus across all North America. What makes mangroves particularly effective in carbon sequestration?
So mangroves can sequester a ton of carbon. I believe globally, like 12 billion metric tons, which is a lot. And they're able to sort of capture this carbon in their leaves, in their roots, in their soil, and like underground, like beneath the water. So in their roots, as I mentioned. So not only that, they have additional benefits such as protecting the coastline as a natural barrier because, of course, in these coastlines, you're going to have frequent storms, right? So by planting these mangroves, not only they sequester a ton of carbon, they also act as a natural barrier to protect the coastlines because in China, the largest mangrove reserve is home to like 2.4 million people.
Wow.
So just by planting all these mangroves, they're able to protect this coastal region, right? And they're also home to a ton of fish, shrimp. So all these benefits, that's why I focus on mangroves specifically.
Right. It's interesting because, like you're saying, in addition to it being kind of a common sense solution to just to replant, it also has all these other additional hidden, maybe not hidden, but additional benefits beyond just the planting and carbon sequestration.
Yeah, right. It's like a whole chain of benefits to the environment.
One of the things that you mentioned in the paper, and I know, as you mentioned, it's been 2 years since you wrote it, but that one of the sort of challenges or things that was being done well in some places but not others was this idea of community engagement in decision-making and climate justice. Can you talk about how those played into your paper with about mangrove restoration?
Yeah, so initially when I wrote the paper, it was more science-based rather than like this climate justice. So when I submitted this paper, the former director of development, Jamie, shout out to her. She liked my paper, but she suggested that I should focus on this community component of like, okay, who are the ones that are actually being impacted in this coastal region, which is the natives, of course, who pretty much live there since forever. They're the ones who are affected by mangrove deforestation because, as I mentioned, you're able to find shrimp, fish in these sort of tidal pools along the mangroves. So this is called like sustainable aquaculture. When it's high tide, all these fish and shrimp come, and when it's low tide, they are sort of sustained within the sediments between these mangroves. So the fish just come to them, and it's just a natural, sustainable thing they do. So if you keep cutting down these trees, well, how are we supposed to get the fish, right? So by including them in like policy making or these governmental approaches, we're able to hear their voice and their views on, okay, how can we sort of conserve these mangroves, right? How can, since they're the ones that have been impacted, it would make more sense to include them in the decision-making process, right?
Right. It seems like it also maybe gives, you know, if you're motivated to implement and discover these solutions or approaches to mitigating climate change, if you're looking to build support for those, if you can engage with community, you'll find a lot more reasons to support a given thing. Or you'll find out that, you know, maybe your approach needs some changes or needs some tweaks in order to properly serve the people who live there.
Yeah, exactly. Even here in Canada, like, we need more Indigenous speaking people to represent these environmental causes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You mentioned the process of engaging with Embark, with Jamie, about the paper. What was the process of having your paper selected and published in the journal?
So this was like a new thing they made, I think, last spring. When I was a food justice facilitator, they told us that we're able to submit our paper so they can publish it. And I thought, oh, this is so cool. Why not? Initially, I was going to submit it to the Student Learning Commons Center, but that was during final season, so I didn't prioritize it. I was, of course, focused on my finals, so I didn't really have time to edit it. But then there's this new opportunity from Embark Sustainability. Did I shout out them? Shout out to them again. So I thought, okay, why not just publish it, see if I win, and I did. I was one of the four that won this competition, sort of speak. And I never thought I would actually have a paper published, which is really cool once again. So Jamie thought to, as I mentioned, to focus on this just climate justice component, which I've had, which is really smart, of course. So yeah, I just submitted it, and then she sort of revised it for me. I also revised it, submitted it once again. And yeah, recently it's published on the Embark website.
And what does it mean to you to have a paper published?
Oh, it's honestly, like I said, I've never thought I would actually have a paper published on the internet. It means a lot to me. Embark provided me so many cool opportunities. I'm also like a welcome day hive leader. So I always tell my new students, get involved with Embark. They have so many cool things regarding the environment, climate justice, food justice. So it means a lot. It also means that students from different backgrounds are able to read my paper and learn from it. So Flo, where you're going to have her later on, she is the one that reached out to me via Instagram saying, you should get on the radio and talk about it. And she liked my paper. Like, okay, you actually read my paper. Cool. So here we are. But yeah, it's a really nice experience.
Yeah, it's not super common to have other students in general, but particularly other students from outside your program or whatever read your work.
Yeah.
Right? And so yeah, it's a cool, I imagine it's a cool experience to have that happen and have people reach out and be like, hey, I read your paper.
Yeah, it's really, really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Coming back to the paper itself, was there anything that really surprised you or stood out to you about the research or about what you wrote about?
Great question. What stood out? I guess that nature-based solutions is the way, right? Like I said, just plant a lot of trees. They naturally sequester tons of carbon. It's like a natural mechanism they do, right? It definitely aids in mitigating climate change effects. And it's just outstanding how plants are so important. My professor, the one I wrote the paper in for her class, she would go on and on about how plants are important. If we want to colonize Mars, if it'll ever happen, we need plants because mm-hmm. it's at the bottom of our food pyramid, right? It supports us all. So, yeah, just knowing that plants are so important and underrated in our environment, it's just nature-based solutions the way, for sure.
You mentioned at the beginning that the professor that asked you to write this paper was looking for you to focus on sort of good news or positive solutions as opposed to the ever-present doom and gloom that surrounds climate change discourse. Do you think that this work or that course changed your perspective or made it easier for you to look for positive solutions and stories?
Honestly, yes. Because a lot of my friends in the environmental program, they say, this is one depressing measure, honestly, because it's all constant negative news, which is, it's facts, right? But of course, there are good positive news out there. It may be hard to find because, negative news is more attractive to the person, right? But there are positive news out there. It was a little hard to find at first, not gonna lie. But honestly, I'm hopeful. A lot of students are very bright. They have their own cool projects they're working on, right? So, yeah.
Yeah. And have you received beyond, it's obviously nice to have the article published and to have people reach out. Have you received any other feedback about the article itself?
I had another friend and she also asked, what the heck's a mangrove? Not an environment student, but she really liked it. My other friend who volunteers for SFU PERG really liked it as well. I'm like, oh, people are actually reading this? Okay, so cool. But yeah, it was really nice.
Great. And what's next for you?
What's next for me? This question. Well, next semester, it should be my last. I literally just need one more course to graduate, which is the capstone course, the big one. I'll graduate. And after that, I'm going to take a good break because I've been studying forever. I'll probably go overseas, like Mediterranean Sea. I love the food. I'm from the Mediterranean Sea. I'm Turkish. So hopefully visit Italy, preferably Sicily, because we have a lot of cultural similarities. And then after that, find a damn job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The big one.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, is there anything else you think people should know about the paper, about yourself?
Well, I want to encourage other students to submit their paper to Embark. I believe they'll have another submission going on probably sometime next year. So definitely check out Embark Sustainability. Publish your papers because why not share what you've worked on, right? Rather than submitting it just for a class, submit it to Embark. It'll showcase what you've learned, what you've worked on, and so other students can read it,
Yeah, I think a lot of students probably don't even think of that as a possibility, right? So good to hear that. You can find the Embark Climate Justice Journal by searching Embark Climate Justice Journal. It's also on the SFU Library website and linked from the Embark website as well. You can check out Senna's paper, Restoring Mangroves in China, A Dual Approach to Climate Mitigation and Community Empowerment, along with the rest of the first ever issue volume of the Embark Climate Justice Journal.
That's right.
And Senna, thank you for joining me today.
Oh, thank you so much, Jesse, for having me.
Of course. That was my conversation from last December, last year, crazy, with Senna Isaac about her paper Restoring Mangroves in China, which was published in the first ever edition of the Embark Climate Justice Journal, which you can find by going to embarksustainability.ca or by searching through the SFU Library Journals section. It's there with a whole bunch of other stuff. This is Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, the campus community radio station at SFU, And I'm joined now in studio by Zarena. Hello.
Hi, Jesse. How are you?
I'm great. Always happy to have, well, anyone in the studio, but particularly someone new in the studio. Welcome. Is this your first time on the radio?
Yes, this is my first time on air. Feels like a very pivotal moment in my life.
The first day of the rest of your life.
Literally. It's also my first last semester at university. Mm-hmm. So I've been going to SFU since 2020. And yeah, it feels great to start this rest of my journey off with a great big bang being on your show. Thanks for having me.
Of course, of course. I started SFU in 2005, but it took me until 2009 to finally make it to the radio station. So sometimes it takes a little bit of time to find the spot, right?
Yeah, that really gives me a lot of, it makes me feel very understood, because procrastination is something that I think plagues a lot of people nowadays. And it makes sense that it's not something that's just been in this new century. Like, it's something that's existed forever, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was procrastinating even before the turn of the century. it was a lot harder for you to find us. We're down here in the basement. I was going to SFU, we were up in our old location, and I had to walk past the station every day when I lived in residence, and it still took me 4 years. So
true. It was right above the bus station.
Yeah.
I feel like it's interesting though to have all the clubs in the same building here at SFU. Like, the student union building is quite cool because everything is in the same area. I feel like we should find a way to merge the club slash radio lifestyle. I also never joined a club at SFU, so
go to club stays every year and look at things and like, oh yeah, that'd be cool if I had an ounce of extra time that I was not dedicating to studying or leisure.
Living your life as a university student. I know. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things too, when it's so close to you and it's always available, you kind of put it to the back corner. You're like, oh, I'll get there one day. Mm-hmm. And then it's your last semester and you're like, oh shoot, I don't know if I joined anything. But that doesn't mean you can't join now. So
totally.
I've started connecting with the SFU PERG, the Public Research Interest Group, and I feel like that is a good step in the right direction.
Totally. And it's never too late to get involved with our organization, with PERG, with Embark, all of our groups. There's lots of stuff for sort of early career students, late career students, and also just community members here at the radio station. You don't have to be a student, right?
Mm-hmm,
you can
exactly.
keep going afterwards. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, well, I'm in my last semester at university. So I started SFU.